Daniel chapter 2, while you're turning there, let me wish you a happy new year and want to just reaffirm our love for you and our willingness and desire to work and labor among you and with you and alongside you in this year. And I pray that our zeal for that will be renewed as a group, and that we'll just continue to commit and recommit ourselves to the work that God has given us all to do here together. And I told Derwin this morning that it's been a good year so far. Not even I could mess it up this quickly. But we are thankful to have this fresh start. It's not really anything, is it? I mean, it's just a made-up thing. We could pick September 20th as a fresh start day if we wanted to, but our calendar, the way it's laid out, it makes us feel like it's a fresh start, a new thing, and something that gives us the chance to start over, and so let's use that momentum to really spur us on to some good things. I want to read from Daniel chapter 2 this morning, starting in verse 36. This is the section of the book of Daniel where Nebuchadnezzar has had a dream, and he is looking for someone to give its interpretation, much like God did through Joseph in the time of Pharaoh, when dreams were shown to him to prophetically tell them what was going to happen. Here we are, and Nebuchadnezzar is having a dream that's going to foretell some things that are going to take place in his day, but then it's going to look and reach way further past the time of Nebuchadnezzar. And here it is, it's Daniel giving the interpretation. Beginning in verse 36, it says, "This was the dream. Now we will tell its interpretation before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the glory. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them into your hand and has caused you to rule over them all. You are the head of gold. After you, there will arise another kingdom inferior to you, then another third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over all the earth. Then there will be a fourth kingdom, as strong as iron. Inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things, so like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush it will break all these in pieces. In that you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it will be a divided kingdom. It will have in it the toughness of iron, inasmuch as you saw the iron mixed with common clay. As the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong and part of it will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. Inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future." So the dream is true, and its interpretation is trustworthy. There's this concept in sports where sometimes you have a team that is far superior to its opponent. It's bigger, it's stronger, it's faster, it's more skilled. It has everything that you would would hope to see in a team. It's got leadership. It's got maturity. And so you have this team that is far superior to its opponent, and yet the two teams end up playing a game about evenly. And the far superior team might actually even lose the game. Now, I'm not here to label the names of any teams. I know that's what y'all were thinking. I'm not going to say that. What I'm talking about, this concept, is the idea of playing down to your competition. You've heard that phrase before? We're a team that has no business being in a close game with this other opponent. I mean, they are bigger, they're stronger, they're faster, they're more skilled, they're advanced in every possible way as you would use to show the metrics of these two teams and where they are and their ability to compete in this game. And yet, the far superior team has been playing down to their competition, which means they're not using their speed. They're not using their strength. They're not using their superior tactics and strategies and game planning. They are letting this far inferior team compete with them and cause them to just kind of lose their composure, to lose their identity and who they are and what got them to this place. And sometimes that team might even lose the game. Or they might win, but they look really ugly in that win, and it's, you know, it's very close and comes down to the wire. I can remember an Alabama basketball game one time. They were playing Minnesota in one of those preseason tournaments, and there were two players that got locked up in a tussle down below the goal, and it just happened to be on Alabama's end of the court. And so the Alabama bench stepped out onto the floor as if to go and separate their player from the other player. Well, in so doing, they committed the unforgivable sin in basketball. A bench player cannot step onto the court during a live action play. Otherwise, he's thrown out. Well, guess what happens when the entire bench steps out onto the court? The entire bench is thrown out, which leaves Alabama with only the five players that they had on the floor at the time of the tussle. There's like 15 minutes left to go in the game. They're going to have to play this game with only those five players. Within a couple of minutes, one of those five players fouls out. That leaves four. Within another couple of minutes, one of their best players on the team goes up for a shot, comes down on his ankle awkwardly, and twists his ankle. And then there were three. And Alabama had to play the rest of the game, 3-on-5. When you're talking about this level of basketball, you're talking about people who are world-class athletes. And there's no way under the sun that a team of five players should let a team of three players hang around. And not only did they let them hang around, Alabama came back and almost won the game with three players. Why? Because Minnesota forgot who they were. They forgot how many they were. They forgot the fact that they could have literally just played keep away the entire rest of the game until they found a wide open shot and just drove Alabama into the ground. But for whatever reason, they played down to the competition and allowed the other team to come back in the game. What God shows to Nebuchadnezzar and interprets through Daniel is the exact time period that we are living in right now. You know, when he talks about Rome, he talks about that kingdom that would be divided. Some of it would be strong, some of it would be brittle. Commentators, we believe that to be the nation of Rome, the power of Rome. And Daniel says, in the days of those kings, in the days of the Roman Empire, God's going to bring up a kingdom that will be unstoppable, a kingdom that cannot be destroyed. No man, no power, no circumstance, no situation is ever going to come about that is going to stop this kingdom. There is nothing that can defeat it. There is no one who can destroy it, no matter how hard they try. And guess what? That is the kingdom of which you and I are here today as citizens of. That's the kingdom of which we are a part. That is the kingdom that we serve. That is the king that we serve, who rules over this kingdom. It is unstoppable. Sometimes we don't feel unstoppable, though, do we? Sometimes we don't feel like we can just go out and do kingdom work and blaze this trail and go down this path and nothing is going to stand in our way, because we look around and we see lots of things standing in our way. We see our own temptation, our own sin, our own failures, and we think that we've somehow stopped the kingdom by just messing it up, by being our own worst enemy, that we are not able to do the work that God has called us to do. And so we end up stopping the work of the kingdom in our own lives because of our own weakness, our own failure, our own doubts and fears. And so we stop thinking about the kingdom as being this unstoppable force. And so what are we doing when we allow ourselves to think that way? We're playing down to the competition. Right? When you put the kingdom that we serve up against any foe, any enemy, any other team, it is unshakable. It is unstoppable. It cannot be destroyed. And yet, we let a lot of things get in our way and stop us from doing the work of the kingdom and just living in the power and strength of the kingdom that God has established. The only thing that could ever stop this kingdom is if we decide to stop ourselves. It doesn't do anything to the kingdom. The kingdom doesn't go away. The kingdom's not destroyed. But our participation in it is. And sometimes that leads to us just walking away from the kingdom completely. Even though it's the kingdom, it's the only one, it's the one that will endure. Everything else is going to fade away, but not this kingdom. And the only way that we could stop it is just to stop it in our own lives, in our own hearts. The kingdom itself will continue to endure. Look with me in Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Obviously, this is the chapter that comes right after that great Hall of Fame of faith in Hebrews chapter 11, and the author uses that to springboard into this idea that since we have this cloud of witnesses, since these are our people that we look to for example and guidance and strength, let's go on, let's keep moving, let's keep climbing. He then goes into this discussion about Mount Sinai versus Mount Zion. And here we are. We're standing at Mount Sinai. And we're not afraid to touch it the way that they were when they first came to Mount Zion. We're not terrified of the voice that we hear. In fact, it's a voice that is comforting to us, the kind of voice of a father who encourages and nurtures his children. And so he talks about just the vast difference and the things that set apart this kingdom of which we have come, to which we have come. And he says in verse 25, "See to it that you do not refuse him who is speaking. For if those did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, much less will we escape who turn away from him who warns from heaven." And his voice shook the earth then. But now he has promised, saying, "Yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also heaven." This expression, "yet once more," denotes the removing of those things which can be shaken as of created things, so that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. I mean, just imagine the creator of everything, the one who alone holds all the power, who has the ability to shake whatever it is he wants to shake. And when he shakes it, the things that he does not want to continue will cease to exist. And only those things which he has determined will not be shaken will endure. And that's what he says about the kingdom that you and I serve today. That you could take all of the world's politics, you could take all of the world's sports, you could take all of the world's money, you could take all of the world's real estate, possessions, everything that there is. And if he shakes it, there's one thing that will remain at the end of all of that. And it is the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God that you and I serve today. God has told us that you and I are part of a kingdom that cannot be stopped. We are the far superior team, not because we ourselves have made ourselves that way, but because he has made us that way. And he has given us opportunities that we can go out and do the work. And he's saying, when I'm involved in it, no one can stop you from what you're trying to do. In Revelation chapter 3 and verse 7, Jesus writes to the church at Philadelphia, I believe it is. And he says, "When I open a door, no one can shut it. No one. When I close a door, no one can open it." You see the power of this kingdom? You see that when Jesus is involved in this kingdom, when he's doing the work with us and he's going out ahead of us and he's laying out those open doors and closed doors to show us the opportunities that we need to grab hold of and those that we need to run from, as he goes out and opens and closes and opens and closes, that he's saying, no one can stop you. If I determine that a door be opened, it's opened. Walk through it. Don't fear. You cannot be stopped when you're going out and doing the will of God. And with Christ as the leader of that kingdom. Now, that may look differently. That may look differently than we think of. Right? We would think that if we were to be told by our government that we were not allowed to meet. Like, we might think that stopped it right there. We certainly might think if we were confined to our home, well, that's it. It's over. We're stopped. If we're confined to our home and we are kept there under guard by our government, well, clearly that's the end of the road. Don't you just love the way the book of Acts ends? And I wish it didn't end. I wish that just the book just kept going on and on forever. But Luke finished his letter, and he left it completely open. He provided no conclusion, no closing remarks, no signature line, no credits at the end. Will's translation says that Paul was in his own rented quarters, that he was kept there for 2 years. But he was able to receive all who came to him, no man forbidding him. The way the New American Standard reads, it says that he received all with openness, unhindered. And you and I would look at that and we would say, whoa, 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 he's been in prison for 4 years, in addition to however long it took him to make that trip to Rome. To you and I, Paul is the very definition of hindered. That's not how Paul saw it. In Paul's mind, which actually was reality, Christ Jesus had opened a door, and no one could shut it. No man could shut it. Satan himself couldn't shut it. You think, if you're Satan, don't even take a second to imagine that. I'm sorry. Don't even take a second to put yourself in that place. But you would think that Satan would feel pretty good about the fact that he just sent one of the best players on the team to the bench for a long time. He's out of the game. He's on the sideline. Paul, the great apostle, the one who travels around and creates all these converts as he draws people to Christ, and I've just sidelined him for 4 years just by having people accuse him of things that he didn't do. When Christ opens the door, no one can shut it. Think about all the converts that we know of during Paul's time in prison. Think about all the good that we know of that Paul was able to do in his time in prison. Satan had done nothing to even close the door that Christ had opened for Paul one inch. So this idea of being unstoppable, it might look differently. It might look differently than we might think it would if we are ill, maybe even chronically ill and confined to our home and not able to get out. Many of us would kind of be down by that, wouldn't we? We would think, there's not much I can do in the kingdom. Look at Paul. Look at what he was able to do when he was confined to his home. For 4 years, 2 years in Rome, 2 more years in Caesarea when he was kept at the governor's house. Look at all he was able to do for the kingdom when he had the mindset that this kingdom of which I serve, it is unshakable. It is unstoppable. Whatever you try to prevent it from moving forward It's useless. It's vain. Whatever effort you put forth to try to shrink this kingdom, to try to stop it, to try to prevent it from doing what God wants it to do, it is useless to attempt that. But we start looking around. We start seeing the way that things are around us. We see the decline of morality. We see the increase in sin. We see what we would think of as the degradation of society. We see the increasing adoption and acceptance of sinful and evil practices, and we allow the momentum of the kingdom to slow down. But it's not the kingdom. It's not the kingdom that's being slowed down. It's our participation and involvement in it that slows down. We've been told that the great God of heaven, he has given us a kingdom that can't be stopped, no matter how hard anyone tries. And how would you do it? How would you try to stop it? If you were given the role of a first century centurion, and they came to you and said, there's this movement that is going on over there in Judea, I want you to stop it. How would you do it? Do you think you would try anything other than what they tried? Well, let's make fun of them and let's make people think that they're just silly. Well, they tried that. Didn't work. Let's tell them they're not allowed to do it. They tried that. And it just continued to grow. Well, let's threaten them. Let's tell them that if they do it again, there are going to be some serious consequences. Tried it. Kept growing. Let's beat them. Let's drag them off. Let's throw them in prison. Let's kill them. Let's drag them through the streets on horses. Let's put them out in the Colosseum and have them be devoured by lions. Let's hang them to crosses. Upside down, sideways, right side up, it doesn't matter. Let's just nail them to crosses and put them to death. Let's find our number one assassin and let's just sick him on him. Let's give him letters to go everywhere, all over the land, to just torture and punish and imprison all those who say the name Jesus. They tried all of those things. And the church didn't just grow. It exploded. Everywhere it went, it exploded. Because when people heard about an unshakable, unstoppable kingdom, they were able to look around and they were able to see, you know, this Roman Empire is not really all that it's cracked up to be. I mean, part of it's strong, but part of it is really weak. And this is not going to last. We got to be doing the same thing with our country, right? I mean, we got to look around and we got to say, I mean, part of the things that we do as America, I mean, that's good stuff. Part of it's ridiculous, and this is not going to last. No matter how hard we try to make it last, no matter how bad we might want it to last, it's not going to last. It might last for the rest of your life. It might last for the rest of mine. It may just continue to exist. But one of these days, God is going to shake this place. Not just this place, but I'm talking about the whole world. He's going to shake it. And the only thing that's going to stand after he shakes it is the unstoppable kingdom that he established. And gives you and I the opportunity to participate in. That same Apostle Paul, he wrote to his good friend Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 1. He reminds Timothy of his good mother, of his good grandmother. Talks about the way that they helped instill faith in him, set good examples for him. Then he says in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 6, "For this reason I remind you to kindle afresh the gift of God, which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and discipline." Some of your translations probably say, God has not given us a spirit of fear. And you think, Paul really wants Timothy to not play down to the competition. He doesn't want Timothy to lose sight of the unshakable, unstoppable kingdom that he serves. And he writes to him to kindle afresh the gift of God that was in him. The amazing part about that, Paul has that attitude, and he wrote those words in prison. And not just any prison, like the worst kind of prison. Paul, at this point in his life, is down in a hole in the ground, a really dark hole. A damp hole. The kind of hole you put people when you don't intend to ever let them come out of alive. And here he is, thinking about how he can kindle afresh the gift of God in the lives of other people. There's no dark hole that's going to prevent Paul from encouraging Timothy to go out and continue to work in a kingdom that is unstoppable. The whole point of this morning, this lesson, was to kindle afresh in us the gifts of God that He has placed in each one of us as we go out and work in His kingdom. And for us to realize the unshakable, unstoppable nature of this kingdom that we serve, let's get to work. Let's get to work in 2022. Let's kindle afresh all of that, all of those blessings, all of those gifts, all of those talents this year. Let's stop letting the media, stop letting the news, stop letting the things about this country that cause us to be discouraged. Let's think higher than this country. Let's think at the kingdom level. And when we think at the kingdom level, it's going to help us deal with a lot of the stuff that we see on the day-to-day. It's when we live on the day-to-day that we really start to get discouraged and we allow the momentum of the kingdom work in our own lives slow down. Let's get back to work. Let's start realizing again the nature of the God that we serve and the kingdom that He has established. Let's look for those open doors that Jesus opens and no one shuts, and let's stay away from those doors that He closes, that no one can open. How often, this is a complete side note, but how often have you stood at a door holding the handle just trying to open a door that Jesus has clearly shut in your life? You ever done that? How's that working out?
Not very well, is it? Let's commit ourselves to kingdom work, kingdom things, serving kingdom people as best as we can, and trying to add to the kingdom with everyone else that we come in contact.